court aside. Consider it a matter of pride. I'd vowed to recover your parents' maps. I wasn't going to let a little thing like being publicly disgraced stand in my way.
Plus, you could always sell them to the highest bidder.
Corda looked at Lena with something approaching respect.
You really are smarter than you look.
Thanks, I think.
There was a noise from outside, booted feet approaching the caves.
How many are there?
Lena asked.
Snowtroopers? A small section. Maybe two or three.
Then we need to get away.
Corda's hideous grin returned.
I'm done running. It's time to fight.
Beneath the water, Milo watched as the two creatures swam back and forth in front of the Whisperbird.
They're going to attack, CR-8R whined.
Then we have to stop them.
How?
Milo glanced at the lanterns he had strewn all over the cockpit.
Crater, those things can change color, right?
The droid looked confused.
Yes. Your mother designed the bulbs to flash in time with music.
He paused as he realized what Milo was planning.
It will never work.
Milo wasn't about to be discouraged.
Can you link them to the comms system?
Muttering to himself, CR-8R set about creating a wireless network between the lights. Milo urged him on, aware that the bizarre sea creatures were swimming closer with every passing second.
Ready?
As I'll ever be,
came the droid's reply.
Try a simple sequence first.
Like what?
I don't know. Three flashes of blue and then one red.
CR-8R pressed a sequence of buttons on the comms console, and the lanterns flared to life exactly as Milo had instructed him. Blue, 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 red. The response was instantaneous. The two monsters thrashed in the water, almost turning somersaults.
That certainly attracted their attention, CR-8R said.
Try again, said Milo. Three flashes of green.
CR-8R did as he was told. Green, green, green. This time, both creatures propelled themselves forward, heading straight for the Whisperbird. Milo jumped back, thinking they were going to ram the ship. Then right at the last minute, they peeled apart. They whooshed past the cockpit, one to the left and one to the right. When they reappeared a moment later, both tails were a livid purple.
They're looking angry,
CR-8R said.
I hope we didn't just insult their mother.
Milo ran his fingers through his hair.
That's the problem. We don't have a clue what we're saying. We're probably talking gibberish.
CR-8R slapped a metallic palm against his forehead.
Of course, I'm such an idiot.
What is it?
We don't know their language, but the computer might. Your father used translation software to understand the Manius octopoids. If I run the same program,
we'll be able to understand what they're saying. Yes!
CR-8R started busying himself with the computer.
There's a chance, at least. We just need to keep them talking.
Milo looked through the window. The creatures were glaring angrily at them, their tails now a brilliant scarlet.
Crater, I honestly don't think that will be a problem.
Lena held her breath, worried that the sound would give her away. The snowtroopers were almost at the mouth of the cave. Corda was lying in wait, his force pike gripped in both hands. His face was like stone, but his eyes sparkled. It was almost as if he was enjoying himself. She caught a glimpse of the first snowtrooper. His face was protected by a long fabric mask, black goggles shielding his eyes. The white armor was a perfect camouflage for Arctic conditions, an insulating cape hanging from an equipment belt slung around his waist. The trooper paused for a moment, peering into the cave. Lena shrunk back into the shadows as he continued, ready for action. Corda sprang without warning, jabbing at the armored man with his force pike. The trooper threw up an arm, deflecting the weapon's glowing tip. Corda responded by reeling around, the other end of his staff finding the snowtrooper's chest. The force of the blow knocked the trooper onto his back. Corda leapt back as the snowtrooper brought up his blaster. A bolt of sizzling energy shot from the barrel of the rifle, narrowly missing Korda. It slammed into the roof of the cave. Stalactites rained down on Korda, but he didn't seem to mind. The force pike spun in his hand and came down hard. The snowtrooper's gun clattered from his grasp, and the armored man lay still. There was no time to celebrate. A second snowtrooper approached the cave, his blaster raised. Before he could fire, Korda threw the pike like a javelin. It stuck the trooper in the chest, discharging in a brilliant flash of light. The trooper collapsed, a wisp of smoke rising from his chest plate. Lena called out a warning. A third armored figure was crouching behind a rock. Blaster shots burned through the air, and Korda barely managed to throw himself out of their path in time. Shielding himself behind the entrance, he pulled out his own blaster. The two men exchanged shots, but Korda's luck eventually ran out. A bolt smashed into the wall beside his head. The captain cried out as he was struck by flying rocks. He went down and didn't get up again. Lena's hand went to her tool belt as the snowtrooper entered the cave and cautiously kicked Korda in the side. The captain didn't move. The snowtrooper raised his blaster, ready to fire. Whatever Korda had done to her family, she couldn't stand by and watch him get shot at point-blank range. Besides, she would be next. Grabbing her comm link in one hand and a vibro pick from her tool belt in the other, Lena stabbed the pick into the transmitter and twisted. An ear-splitting shriek filled the cave. The snowtrooper looked up to see stalactites dropping toward him, loosened by the sonic pulse. He was buried in an instant. Lena rushed for the entrance. The snowtrooper had been knocked out, but a groggy Korda was trying to dig himself out.
Lena, wait! Please.
Something in his voice made her stop. A vulnerability she'd never heard before. She knew she should keep running. This was more than Korda deserved, but her conscience continued to nag her. If she left him injured in the snow, was she any better than Korda himself? And could she rescue Milo without his help? Hoping that she wasn't making a huge mistake, Lena turned back and offered Korda her hand. The man gave her a puzzled look.
If I were you, I'd be running by now.
But I'm not you,
Lena said, stopping herself from adding, thank goodness. She needed to get him on her side.
The thing is, we need each other.
Korda gave a snort of derision as he pulled himself back to his feet.
Okay, I'm listening.
You're on the run from the Empire just like us, right?
He nodded, those cold eyes fixed on her.
You want our maps. I want my brother back. Maybe we can strike a deal.
I'll help you if you help me.
Sounds fair. I've already saved your life, after all.
Saved my life?
Korda asked before laughing. It wasn't a pleasant sound.
Your idea has merit, and that was a nice trick with the comlink. You're resourceful. I can almost see how you evaded me for so long.
You're welcome,
she replied.
Don't push your luck, girl. A truce it is for now. But if you try to escape...
She raised her hands, hoping she wasn't making the biggest mistake of her life.
I won't. I promise.
Then we better get going,
he growled, staggering out of the cave.
Are you all right?
Lena asked, gingerly stepping over an unconscious snowtrooper to follow Korda onto the icy rocks. The captain snatched up his force pike.
I've been in worse fights.
She could believe that. Lena glanced back at the snowtroopers.
Will there be any more like them?
What do you think?
He replied, unclipping his comlink to speak gruffly into the transmitter.
Korda to Star Herald. Come in.
There was no answer.
RX-48?
Trouble?
Lena asked.
Maybe. We need to get back to the Star Herald.
He turned and sneered at her.
Are you coming, partner?
Chapter 8. Partners. Lena had imagined an entire battalion of snowtroopers waiting for them as they trudged across the ice, but the frozen sea was empty except for the Star Herald itself. She couldn't relax, though, imagining blaster fire cutting them down at any moment.
"Are you sure this is a good idea?"
she asked, looking around.
"No," came Corda's reply. "But what's the alternative? Wait for those three to wake up?"
Back at the cave, Corda had offered Lena one of the blasters. She'd shaken her head, not wanting to even touch the horrible thing. He'd shrugged, burying the rifles in the snow. He had then searched through the trooper's equipment packs, finding a climbing rope. Testing its strength, he'd proceeded to tie the soldiers together. Lena had no doubt that Corda's impressive knots would hold the snowtroopers when they eventually came to, but she had no desire to find out firsthand. Corda strode ahead, his broad back to her. She could run, but where would she go? She'd seen how easily Corda had tossed that force pike. The weapon had taken down a snowtrooper. What chance would she have? No, she would have to trust Corda for now. She wondered what Milo would say. She smiled as she imagined his eyes going wide.
"Sis, are you crazy?"
Maybe she was, but she had gotten them into this mess. Now she would do anything she could to get them out.
"Quiet,"
Corda whispered as they crept through the stolen Imperial ship. The Star Herald was eerily peaceful, the only sound the gentle thrum of the idling power systems. Despite her better judgment, Lena stayed close to Corda. They slowed as they reached the flight deck, movement obvious beyond the double doors. Lena stood on tiptoes to look through a round window. A solitary snowtrooper was checking a display on the flight console. He wore the rank insignia of a commander on his chest and stood beside the scorched remains of what had once been an RX pilot droid. Lena wanted to ask Corda what they should do, but the former officer was watching the trooper like a Draberian hawk. The question soon became irrelevant as a blaster cocked behind them. A second snowtrooper stood in the corridor, his weapon trained on Corda.
"I have found the captain,"
the trooper informed his superior as he marched them both through the doors. The commander looked Corda up and down.
"Former captain,"
he corrected, with obvious pleasure. His helmet turned to Lena.
"And who is this?"
"Lena Graf, fugitive and rebel,"
Corda replied coldly. Before Lena could look at the man in shock, Corda grabbed her jacket and pulled her close.
"And my prisoner."
"You lying Monga snake,"
Lena yelled, struggling against his grip.
"So much for being partners."
"Partners," he said with a cruel laugh. "You're a bigger fool than I thought."
"But you said—"
"I said what I needed to keep you under control. I had enough to worry about without you making a run for it."
The glowing end of the force pike hovered near her face, its heat prickling against her cheek.
"Now it's too late to run anywhere."
"Hand her over,"
the commander ordered, but Corda shook his head.
"Her brother and the droid designated Crater are trapped beneath the surface."
"So?"
"Commander, the droid contains information vital to the Empire. Darth Vader himself ordered me to bring it back."
The snowtrooper shifted at Vader's name.
"Then I shall recover the data myself."
"I think not. This ship is fitted with a tractor beam. I propose that we fish the Whisper Bird out of the water, retrieve the droid, and deliver the information to Lord Vader together."
"Why should I work with a traitor?"
the commander asked. Lena thought it was a good question. Corda smiled.
"Because this traitor has programmed the Star Herald to only respond to my orders. Quite frankly, Commander, you need me far more than I need you."
He smiled again, like a man who had already won.
"Do we have a deal?"
Chapter 9. The Tractor Beam. The Star Herald hovered above the ice, its engines thrumming. Corda sat in the co-pilot's seat and checked the data from RX-48's probe.
"There she is,"
he announced, as the computer pinpointed the Whisper Bird's precise location. Lena watched helplessly as he turned to the tractor beam controls. The snowtroopers had cuffed her to a chair, but only after removing her trusty tool belt. She pulled against the restraints, but they wouldn't budge. She was trapped, and there was nothing she could do about it. The snowtroopers, meanwhile, were watching Korda intently, blasters in hand, just in case. She couldn't blame them. How could she have trusted him? All that talk about a truce had just been an act. Of course it had. The man didn't have a decent bone in his body. How stupid had she been, thinking she could play a slime toad like Korda at his own game? As if he could read her mind, the captain turned to her as he flicked a switch. A loud hum filled the air, accompanied by a faint vibration through the deck beneath their feet.
"Tractor beam activated," Korda announced, smirking at Lena in triumph.
Many fathoms below, Milo and CR Adar were unaware of what was happening above the ice. Instead, Milo was cheering as the sea creatures' tails pulsed with blue and yellow lights. CR Adar looked up from the computer readout.
"They seem to be saying hello."
"Say hello back," Milo urged. "We need to ask for their help."
The whisper bird shook, a warning light flashing on the dashboard. Milo grabbed the pilot's chair to steady himself.
"What's that?"
"It appears we've been caught in a tractor beam."
"The Imperial ship?"
"Sorry, my psychic circuit seems to be malfunctioning today."
"This isn't the time to be sarcastic,"
Milo snapped as the whisper bird shuddered again.
"No, it's the time to run around screaming, engaging panic mode."
"Don't you dare,"
Milo said, glancing back toward the window. The sea creatures were nowhere to be seen.
"They must have been scared away," CR Adar said.
Milo cried out as the deck seemed to vanish beneath his feet. He crashed forward, the steering column ramming painfully into his side. CR Adar checked the computer.
"I was afraid this would happen. The cliff face is disintegrating in the tractor beam. We're going over the edge."
"There has to be something we can do,"
Milo said. Beside him, the comlink started flashing.
"Yes,"
he said, hitting the control.
"Lena, is that you? We could really use some good news right now."
"I'm afraid your sister is otherwise engaged," a silky voice replied over the comlink. "But don't worry, I have everything under control."
Milo recognized the voice immediately.
"Korda,"
he said. The whisper bird lurched again. Now all they could see was the inky darkness of the waters below.
"Grab onto something,"
Milo shouted as the ship went over the edge.
"I'm trying,"
insisted CR Adar, hanging on to the rear seat. And then they were free, plunging down. All around, sparks exploded from every computer console, a giant crack appearing in the canopy window. Every leak that Milo had plugged burst open again, and with a frightened howl, Mork scampered into the cockpit and launched himself at Milo. Milo hugged his pet tight, not knowing what else to do.
"Shields collapsing," CR Adar shouted over the noise. "Master Milo, I'm sorry."
Milo buried his head in Mork's fur. All he could hear was rushing water, sparking electricity, and cracking transparent steel. This couldn't be happening. This couldn't be the end. Chapter 10. Self-destruct. There was a jolt, and the ship stopped falling. Milo opened his eyes, looking around in confusion.
"They did it," CR Adar announced. "They locked on! We're being lifted back to the surface!"
"Back into Korda's clutches, you mean? What do we do?"
"Get captured?"
CR Adar offered unhelpfully. No, Milo would never do that. What had he said on that holo recording? No surrender? Ruffling Mork's fur, he looked around, trying to ignore the cracks in the canopy. And then he saw movement out in the water.
Yes, it was one of the sea creatures. "Crater, do we have enough power to send another message?"
"With the lanterns?"
the droid asked.
"Barely."
"Tell them we need their help."
"Those monsters? What can they do?"
"I don't know, but we need to do something. We can't let Korda win."
The whisper bird broke the surface of the ocean, water cascading from cracks in its hull. Expertly, Corda maneuvered the destroyed craft onto the ice and disengaged the tractor beam. On the flight deck, Lena sobbed when she saw the state of her parents' ship. The Whisper Bird was a wreck. One of its wings was missing, the hull pitted. It would never fly again. Corda set down the Star Herald and opened the comms channel.
Milo, come in. This is Corda.
There was no response. Corda repeated his demand, but still they heard nothing but static. What had happened to her brother? Corda turned to the commander.
We need to retrieve the droid ourselves.
The commander shook his head.
No, we'll retrieve the droid. You stay here.
Corda sat back in his chair and spoke, never taking his eyes from the snowtrooper.
Computer, this is Captain Vizsla Corda of the Imperial Navy. Prime self-destruct, authorization code Corda Alpha Gamma 9.
The commander raised his blaster.
What are you doing?
He was rewarded with another of Corda's smiles.
I did more than reprogram the Star Herald when I borrowed her. I also hid several thermal detonators in her drive systems. Either you agree to my terms, or I blow her to smithereens. You're bluffing, the commander said. You'll destroy yourself. Commander, my reputation is already in shreds. What else do I have to lose? Let me be a part of this mission and I'll spare the ship. Freeze me out or double-cross me in any way and the Star Herald will be blown into tiny little pieces. High Command will be furious. They'll probably take it out on your entire unit.
Lena watched Corda as he spoke. If he was bluffing, he was an extremely good actor.
Still, he'd fooled her before. Very well, the commander finally agreed. Excellent, said Corda, rising to his feet. He paused, then added, One last thing to mention. The thermal detonators are linked to my life signs.
He tapped a transmitter on his chest plate.
If anything happens to me...
He left the sentence hanging, but Lena knew what he meant. Boom. Corda's feet crunched on the ice as he marched toward the Whisper Bird. The snowtroopers followed.
What idiots they were, believing that nonsense about the self-destruct. He'd known they would fall for it as soon as the commander had swallowed the lie about the ship obeying Corda and Corda alone. Besides, as if he would destroy himself. No, Corda knew exactly what he was going to do. As soon as he got his hands on the maps, he would dump these half-wits and take to the stars in the Star Herald. The maps would bring him a fortune, more than enough to keep the Empire off his trail. He could never go back. He knew that now. The Empire was behind him, along with all that bowing and scraping to the likes of Vader. No, Corda was his own man, in charge of his own destiny. Why work for Emperor Palpatine when he could work for himself?
They came to a stop in front of the Whisper Bird. Corda raised his comm link to his lips.
Milo, this is your last chance. Lower the ramp.
He waited, but the brat didn't respond. No problem. Who needed a ramp anyway? Returning the comm link to his belt, Corda turned to the commander.
Blast an opening in the hull. As big as you want.
Chapter 11. That sinking feeling. Lena fought against her restraints as she watched the snowtroopers fire on the Whisper Bird. It was no good. She was going nowhere. Outside, the snowtroopers had done their job. A gaping hole had appeared in the Whisper Bird's stern. Corda was already climbing on board.
Look out, Milo,
she said, as if her brother could hear. There was a noise from beyond the double doors. Footsteps. Light, scampering footsteps in the corridor outside. Something had gotten inside the Star Herald, some kind of wild animal. She yanked at her cuffs, the metal cutting into her wrists as the chain rattled against the back of the seat. The noise seemed to stop the creature, whatever it was.
That's right,
Lena yelled, trying to sound both braver and scarier than she felt.
Run away! Run away!
She fell silent again, listening intently. The ship was silent. Had she done it? Had the thing gone? Then the footsteps sounded again, closer than ever. They were running straight toward her. The doors of the flight deck hissed open and the creature bounded in, squealing at the top of its voice. Corda wrinkled his nose in disgust as he marched through the Whisper Bird. This was the ship that had evaded capture for so long? Earlier, out on the ice, he had faked grudging admiration for Lena Graf to gain her trust. Now he only felt pity.
How could anyone live like this?
He turned to the commander and raised a finger to his lips. There was a voice ahead. A young boy's. Milo.
Come in, please,
the boy said.
This is the Whisper Bird. We've been attacked by Imperial forces. Please send help.
Corda smiled. No one would hear the call, not this far into wild space. He gripped his force pike and crept toward the cockpit. First he'd deal with the boy, and then he'd take out the snowtroopers. It was almost too perfect. Milo's whining voice continued its desperate plea.
Come in, please! This is the Whisper Bird! We've been attacked by Imperial forces! Please send help!
No one's coming, announced Corda, stepping into the cockpit.
Then he froze. A hologram of Milo Graf flickered in front of the comm unit, a looped recording playing over and over again.
Come in, please! This is the Whisper Bird! We've been attacked by Imperial forces! Please send help!
He had been tricked. Corda smashed the transmitter with the force pike, the hologram vanishing. He spun around.
The boy must be hiding somewhere on the ship. Find him.
But the commander was staring like an infant at the lanterns that were draped around the cockpit's cracked canopy. They were pulsing red and purple, the lights following some kind of simple sequence.
What are they?
Asked the commander.
Who cares? Roared Corda. Find the boy!
The commander took a step closer.
They're pointing down to the ice.
Corda went to grab the man's shoulder when there was a rumble deep below the ship. The Whisper Bird shook as huge white arms burst up through the ice. Corda fell forward as the ship toppled. A massive tail, pulsing purple and red, snaked around the Whisper Bird, pulling it down. Pulling it into the water. Corda shoved at the commander as they plunged beneath the surface. Freezing water flooded the ship, rushing through the hole the troopers had blasted. It gushed into the cockpit even as the hull buckled beneath the grip of the monstrous tail. The snowtroopers struggled in the deluge, their heavy armor weighing them down. Corda didn't give them a second glance. Shrugging off his soaked furs, he swam through the ship. The walls were collapsing, but he kept going. Vizsla Corda wasn't going to die on an insignificant moon light years from civilization. His lungs screamed for oxygen as he reached the exit, only to find it blocked by the monster's pulsing tail. Black spots appeared in front of Corda's eyes. He was blacking out. He reached for his blaster, fumbling with the holster. Finally, he pulled it free and fired. The shot went wide, striking the hull, but it did the trick. The tail retreated, enough for Corda to squeeze past and kick himself free of the ship. Sunlight was streaming through the hole in the ice as he propelled himself up.
Not much longer,
he told himself.
Nearly there.
Something brushed against his foot, but he kicked it away. He needed to keep going. He needed to survive. Corda broke the surface just as he felt consciousness slip away. He hacked, the sudden pain of breathing air into his tired lungs bringing back his senses. He couldn't stop. There was no knowing if the thing that had taken the Whisper Bird was coming back. He forced himself to the edge of the ice and dragged his aching body out of the water. He lay there for a minute, gasping for breath, wanting to sleep.
No.
He had to stay awake. He was soaked to the skin. It wouldn't be long before hypothermia set in. Korda lurched to his feet, shivering in the cool air. Ice crystals had already started forming over his eyes, but there was no mistaking the sound that filled his ears. The Star Herald was taking off. He wiped his eyes clear and moaned as he saw his stolen ship rising steadily into the sky. He fell to his knees and bellowed as it rocketed toward the clouds.
No! You can't do this! Come back! Come back!
In a second, the Star Herald was gone. Alone on the ice, Captain Korda threw back his head and screamed. The crew of the Imperial cruiser scrambled into action as the Star Herald blasted into space. They had expected to hear from the snowtroopers, not see the stolen prototype making an escape bid. The captain of the cruiser called for his deputy to prime the tractor beam, but it was already too late. The Star Herald stretched and escaped into hyperspace before he even reached the controls. On the Star Herald's flight deck, Lena slumped back in the co-pilot's seat. She was silent, as was her brother. The animal in the corridor had turned out to be Mork, Milo and CR-8R following close behind. Milo explained what they had done as he used one of her tools to remove the handcuffs.
There are these creatures in the sea. We sent them a message asking them to attack the Whisper Bird just before we got out.
Milo had sacrificed the Whisper Bird to escape, to survive. Lena still couldn't take it in. The Whisper Bird really was gone this time. Their home. Their last link to their parents. She began to cry.
Sis,
Milo said, wrapping her in a hug. She hugged him back, never wanting to let go.
I'm sorry,
she sobbed.
This is all my fault. If I hadn't lied, if I hadn't tricked everyone. You didn't know this was going to happen. Besides, you were trying to find Mom and Dad. They could still be around here.
Behind them, CR-8R was examining a screen.
I'm afraid not. It appears the Bridger's lead was a fake. Captain Korda himself sent the message to lure you here.
See?
Lena said, breaking away from her brother.
We should never have come. Now we've lost everything. The ship, all our memories of Mom and Dad.
Maybe not everything, CR-8R said.
With a buzz, his hollow emitter burst to life. The flight deck was filled with a recording of Lena, Milo, and their parents playing speeder tag.
Before we escaped, I downloaded everything I could from the Whisper Bird's databanks, including most of your holo recordings.
Both children raced through the hologram to fling their arms around the bewildered droid. Even Mork joined in, cackling wildly.
Stop it,
CR-8R said, trying to bat them away. Then his voice softened.
I'm just glad you're both safe. I know I'm only a grumpy old droid, but I don't know what I'd do without you two.
What about Mork?
Milo asked, wiping away his tears.
Don't push it,
CR-8R said, trying to dislodge the monkey lizard from his repulsor unit. Milo laughed, looking around the pristine flight deck.
I guess we do have a new ship. This thing is seriously cool. And wanted by the Empire,
Lena pointed out. Milo shrugged.
So are we. There's something else, CR-8R said, turning back to the console. Captain Korda hacked into the Imperial communication network.
Why would he do that?
Milo asked, peering at the screen.
Probably so he could keep an eye on official channels,
Lena suggested.
Exactly, agreed CR-8R. He was looking for any mentions of you or your parents, and he found this.
A picture appeared on the screen. It showed a man and a woman. The image was fuzzy and indistinct, but Milo recognized them right away.
That's Mom and Dad! Where are they?
Lena swung herself into a chair and hit a button. Data scrolled across the bottom of the picture.
According to this, they've been taken to a planet on the very edge of wild space.
It appears to be some kind of imperial mining colony, CR-8R told them. The world is one your parents visited before you were born.
Really?
Milo said, peering at the screen.
What is it?
One of the first planets they ever mapped. Its name is Agaris.
Epilogue. Rissa Graff stumbled as they were marched from the Imperial shuttle. Her husband caught her, and she looked up into Oryk's face. He looked so gaunt, his skin like paper. She hated to think how she looked.
Move,
ordered a stormtrooper, prodding her in the back. She allowed herself to be pushed across the hangar and into a dark, low-ceilinged corridor. Oryk held her hand, their fingers intertwined. Condensation settled on Rissa's skin. The air on the planet was damp and clammy. When they were flying in, the place had looked familiar, although she had no idea why. Rissa was having trouble recognizing anything these days. The air in the tunnel was thick with moisture, stinking of mold and rotting vegetation. They were shoved into a room. It was almost completely bare except for a table and chairs. A gloved hand grabbed her shoulder, pushing her down in a seat. They sat in silence, flanked by two stormtroopers, waiting for goodness knew what. Eventually, a door slid open, and a tall man strode in. His uniform was immaculate, his hands clasped tightly behind his back. His hair, gray at the temples, was slicked back, and his cadaverous face was dominated by a long, hooked nose. The man's sudden appearance had an immediate effect on their guards. The stormtrooper snapped to attention, standing just a little bit taller in his presence. Who was this man? The newcomer paused opposite them for a moment before pulling out a chair. He sat, smoothed out his coat, and leaned forward on the desk. Rissa couldn't stop staring at his eyes. They were like two black holes drawing her in.
Welcome to Agaris, he finally said.
His voice was clipped, cultured. He looked at them both, his thin lips turning up at the corners. Rissa's skin crawled. It was like watching a snake trying to smile.
My name is Wilhuff Tarkin, the man continued. I need to talk to you about your children.
Adventures in Wild Space. The Rescue. It is a time of darkness. With the end of the Clone Wars and the destruction of the Jedi Order, the evil Emperor Palpatine rules the galaxy unopposed. After months of searching, Milo and Lena Graff have learned that their parents, Rissa and Oryk, are being held in an Imperial mining colony on the planet Agaris, deep in wild space. Traveling in a stolen Imperial transport, Milo and Lena have reached Agaris, determined to free their parents from the clutches of the Empire. But on this mist-shrouded world, nothing is as it seems. Chapter 1. Agaris. The anchoring spike shot out from the Star Herald's underside, burrowing deep into the surface of the tiny moon. The rock was barely worthy of that name, Lena thought. It wasn't so much a moon as a misshapen meteor, caught by the planet's gravity and doomed to orbit endlessly. But it should be enough to hide them. Milo hit the recoil switch, and the cable drew taut, securing the stolen Imperial ship in place. CR-8R cut the power, and the cockpit was plunged into darkness. Mork burrowed down into Milo's lap, chittering softly.
Nice move, sis, Milo breathed. Crate, did they see us?
CR-8R shook his metal head.
There has been no detectable increase in Imperial chatter, he said. It would appear that Mistress Lena's quick thinking has allowed us to arrive unnoticed.
Lena peered out through the viewport as the pale light of dawn leaked into the cockpit.
Now the question is, how do we get from here to there?
Above the moon's desolate surface, the planet Agaris was rising. A gloomy, forbidding world, it was shrouded in shifting banks of murky clouds. But even in those small patches where the cloud cover broke, Lena could see none of the dazzling greens and blues she would have expected from a world like that. Agaris was teeming with life. All their sensors said so. But beneath the gray, all she could see was more gray.
The Imperial compound is located on the northernmost continent, CR-8R said, pointing with a long metal finger. Sensors read a powerful energy signal.
Just one base?
Milo asked, surprised.
Mira and Ephraim said the Empire had been taking over whole worlds, setting up base after base so they could control the population.
Maybe there's no population to control, Lena pointed out. There's no sign of any cities or technology.
Master Milo has a point, though,
CR-8R said.
If Agaris is the site of an Imperial mining operation, why do the sensors pick up no drilling sites or auxiliary bases beyond the central compound? That said, it does help us in one important respect. There is only one place your parents could possibly be.
Milo reached for Lena's hand, and together they gazed at the vast pale globe. Somewhere up there, Rissa and Auric Graf were waiting, imprisoned and unsuspecting. Their long search was almost at an end. Lena tried to picture her parents' faces, tried to summon up the smell of them and the sound of their voices. In recent weeks, these things had begun to fade, her dreams of Rissa and Auric drowned out by darkness and danger. But no longer, she promised herself. Soon, somehow, they would all be back together. She and Milo would find a way. They had to. A glimmer in the blackness caught her eye, and she felt Milo's grip tighten. The star destroyer Executrix glided from the planet's shadow like a sleek silver shark hunting for prey. The command tower emerged into the light, bristling with laser turrets and antennae.
Are you absolutely sure they can't see us?
Milo asked nervously.
All of the Star Herald systems have been powered down, CR-8R told him. We are a gray ship on a gray moon, and they have no idea we are here.
Let's hear them anyway, Crate,
Lena suggested.
Just in case.
I assure you, Mistress Lena, CR-8R said, a little defensively. I am monitoring all Imperial transmissions. If anything out of the ordinary...
We trust you, Crater,
Milo said.
It'll just make us feel better is all.
You'll feel better listening to the voices of your enemy? CR-8R
asked.
Sometimes I simply do not understand the two of you.
But he patched the signal through anyway, the hiss of static rattling through the Star Herald's internal speakers. It had been an unwitting gift from the ship's previous owner, Captain Korda, a scanner pre-tuned to all the Imperial communication bands, even a few classified ones. When this was over, Lena thought, they could hand the ship over to Mira and Ephraim Bridger back on Lothal. Perhaps their friends would forgive them for running away.
Executrix, this is Transport 366.
A man's voice came through, distant and distorted.
We're ready for departure.
Roger that, 366,
a second man replied.
Prepare to release docking clamps.
A bulky haulage vessel emerged from the Star Destroyer's ventral hangar, flanked by a pair of TIE fighters. Engines flared and the three ships moved toward the planet, a trio of black specks silhouetted against the clouds.
Agaris Base, we have locked onto your beacon and are making our descent,
the first man said, as the transport vanished into the murky atmosphere.
Escort, keep your eyes peeled for those stalks.
Milo looked at Lena, confused.
Stalks?
He asked.
Like plant stalks?
Or storks?
Lena suggested.
Maybe some kind of giant bird down there?
They'd have to be pretty huge to take down an Imperial transport,
Milo said.
Either way, it's weird.
Executrix, this is Sea Patrol,
a clearer voice cut in, and Lena ducked instinctively as a second pair of TIEs shrieked overhead, angling toward the destroyer.
We've finished our sweep. There are no ships out here. Whatever happened to those men, it's the compound's problem, not ours.
Stow that talk, Sea Patrol, someone replied abruptly, or I'll have you reassigned to planetary scout duty. How would you like that?
Roger that. Executrix,
the pilot replied.
Please inform Governor Tarkin that our sensors are clean, but we'll do another sweep just in case.
That's better, Sea Patrol, the officer said. Make this a double shift and perhaps we can forget about your inappropriate comment.
Tarkin,
Milo said.
I've heard that name. Ephraim said he was a big shot in the Imperial High Command.
So what's he doing all the way out here?
Lena asked.
And what were they talking about? What happened to their men?
Maybe it's those giant storks,
Milo mused.
Maybe they ate them.
The pilot implied that the incident was still a mystery, CR-8R added. Clearly, the situation on Agaris is far from satisfactory from an Imperial standpoint.
Which could be good for us,
Lena said.
If they're distracted by these storks or whatever, it'll make it easier for us to sneak in.
If this Tarkin is as important as Master Milo believes, he will be well guarded, the droid told her. Milo nodded.
But if they're busy guarding him, maybe they won't pay as much attention to a couple of prisoners.
Lena grinned.
Right,
she said.
Let's get down there and find out.
They watched in silence as the executrix crossed the face of the planet, a black arrow against the swirling clouds. The moon drifted on an opposite orbit, taking them gradually out of range. Soon the Star Destroyer had been swallowed by the gray face of Agaris.
Once we've detached, I'll give her 2 seconds of thrust,
Lena explained.
That should be enough to break the moon's orbit and enter the planet's gravity. Crater, leave all other systems shut down until we reach the cover of those clouds.
All of them? The droid asked. But Mistress Lena, with no way to navigate, we will be in a blind spin. You will have no way to-
Let me worry about that, Crate, she said. With luck, anyone watching will think we're just a hunk of debris. Milo, retract the anchor. Let's move before that Star Destroyer comes back around.
She felt the Star Herald lifting gently off the moon's surface and heard a clunk as the cable snaked back into the ship.
Crater, bring the engines back online,
Lena ordered.
3, 2.
And she hit the thrusters, the little moon's gravity tugging them back in their seats as the Star Herald rose, its snub nose pointed directly at the dim world below. Seconds later, Lena cut the power, hoping no Imperial observers had spotted the brief flare of their engines. She felt the planet's gravity take hold, a steady downward pull. The Star Herald began to roll, Agaris sliding slowly out of view, replaced first by star-studded space, then by the lumpy, uneven cylinder of the little moon, receding behind them. Milo groaned.
I shouldn't have eaten the last of that ice fish for breakfast.
Try shutting your eyes,
Lena suggested. Milo tried it for a moment, then shook his head.
That just makes it worse.
They could see Agaris again, filling the screen with shifting masses of gray. Their spin was starting to speed up, the planet's gravity tugging them in every direction at once. Mork gave a sickly moan. Lena knew how he felt.
Executrix, this is Sea Patrol.
The pilot's voice was suddenly back, and Lena jerked her head up.
Executrix, come in, please.
This is Executrix, the officer replied. What is it now, Sea Patrol?
We're making our second pass, the pilot said. We've picked up something on the scanners. Sending the report now.
Lena looked back at Milo, not daring to speak. As the Star Herald rolled, they could see the fighters, distant but closing. The officer sighed.
We appreciate your diligence, Sea Patrol, but there's no need to report every meteorite your scanners pick up.
It's made of metal, sir,
the pilot radioed back.
I know there are no power readings, but-
So it's a meteorite with an iron core,
the officer interrupted.
Or it's a hunk of space debris, probably from last time we dumped the garbage. Ignore it, Sea Patrol, and continue your sweep.
Lena sighed in relief. That had been way too close. If the Empire spotted them now, they'd be finished. Even if they managed to escape, they'd have lost the element of surprise. The Star Herald rolled toward the planet, and she could see high cloud turrets reaching up toward them. Once they were safely inside the atmosphere, she'd fire up the thrusters and find somewhere to land.
Crater,
she said.
Get ready to-
Executrix, we're going to check it out.
The pilot's voice crashed back into the cockpit.
You're probably right, but it's my neck if the governor finds out we missed something important.
Milo's face whitened. Lena gripped the armrests.
All right, Sea Patrol,
the officer replied,
but make it fast.
Crater, get her started,
Lena barked.
Milo, strap in tight.
She felt the engines rattle and catch and slam the thrusters, turning that sickening roll into a twisting dive. She could imagine the look of surprise on the TIE pilot's face as the drifting hunk of space debris suddenly flared to life, rocketing toward the planet.
They're coming after us, Milo warned her.
I'm sure they are,
Lena replied, as they plunged into the atmosphere, the air fading from black to blue. Then the clouds swallowed them. One moment they were streaking down in bright sunlight, the next they were plowing through a dense fog, trails of vapor streaming across the screen. Winds buffeted the Star Herald's hull, and the ship rattled as Lena hauled back on the steering bar, leveling them out. They broke from the clouds into the gloom of a murky day. The sun was a watery glow behind the clouds, and below them Lena could see a dark plain stretching to a range of jagged mountains on the distant horizon. At first she thought the surface was bare, just smooth gray-brown rocks. Then looking closer, she saw that it was covered with huge domes, like blisters on the skin of a Garrus.
Are those?
She began, perplexed.
They look like
mushrooms, Milo finished for her. A whole forest of them, and they're huge. Look at that one, it's bigger than the ship.
Giant fungi are not uncommon. They are found on many charted worlds, CR-8R pointed out.
But there doesn't seem to be anything else, Milo said. Where are the trees? Where's the grass? It's just mushrooms every...
There was a roar, and the Star Herald shook violently. Mork shrieked, jumping from Milo's lap and shivering beneath the navigation console. Lena slammed the steering bar sideways, and the next blast just missed them, a green bolt flashing past into the mushroom forest below.
We cannot evade them, Mistress Lena, CR-8R said. They are following too closely behind us.
Checking the rear viewport, Lena saw that he was right. The two TIEs were almost on them, their ion engines roaring. Evasive maneuvers would be no help at all at this range, so where were they going to go?
What's that?
Milo asked, pointing up ahead.
It looks like a tower.
A tall shape was outlined against the sky. Milo was right. It did look like an artificial structure, a slender black skyscraper with a wide base.
Imperial?
Lena asked.
The Imperial compound is still some distance away, at the base of those mountains,
CR-8R said.
And this structure does not correspond to any design I am familiar with.
Another blast hit the ship, sending them tumbling. Lena grappled for control, managing to right the Star Herald's course, but knowing another shot could finish them.
We'll head for it anyway, she said. We don't have a choice. Maybe whoever built it can help us somehow.
Wait,
Milo said in amazement.
Is it moving?
Somehow, the entire massive structure was angling toward them, the base rooted in the ground, but the higher levels swinging to face them. As it did so, Lena realized it wasn't a tower at all. It wasn't even straight. The structure curved in the middle like a tall stem, weighed down by a heavy, bulb-like cap.
That's no building, Milo said. It's another mushroom.
Is it pointing at us?
Lena asked, their pursuers momentarily forgotten. As they watched, a series of pale green folds peeled back along the mushroom's cap, and the massive protuberance spread wide like a flower, revealing an opening in the center.
It almost looks like... No, it can't be, Milo said.
Like what?
Lena urged him.
Well, it sort of looks like a cannon, doesn't it?
Milo asked.
Like a barrel with the opening at the top and that massive stalk...
Then it hit him.
Lena, get us out of here! The stalks, remember? Watch out for the stalks!
But it was too late. Lena saw a ripple building at the base of the huge fungus, making its way up the stalk, picking up speed. When it reached the open bulb, something flew out, a gleaming red sphere as big as a TIE fighter's body, glistening with golden spikes. Lena grabbed the steering bar with all her might, knowing they didn't stand a chance. The projectile slammed into the Star Herald's starboard side, spines piercing the hull. Alarms wailed and sirens blared, but by then they were already going down, spinning helplessly toward the planet's surface. Chapter 2 Scorched World. Governor Tarkin removed one black leather glove and ran his finger along the steel railing of the balcony. His fingertip turned black. He shook his head in disgust, pulling a handkerchief from his pocket and wiping his hands clean before replacing the glove. Everything about that planet was putrid. The air was damp and fetid, the ever-present clouds were gloomy and oppressive, and it seemed as though everything he owned, his clothes, his boots, his weapons, even his prized Corvette starship, the Carrion Spike, had acquired an added layer of creeping black fungus. For a man who prized cleanliness, it was almost unbearable. A flare of red light caught his eye, and Tarkin peered into the gloom. From his vantage point, high on the sloping side of the stone compound, he could see out across the trackless mushroom forests of Agaris. It was a sight he had already come to loathe. He despised the huge gray domes and the smaller fungi clustered around them, their lurid markings like splashes of neon paint on a gray wall. But his deepest hatred was reserved for those giant stalks, with their infuriating habit of knocking his ties out of the sky with their ugly, spiked seedlings. He would have ordered them all hacked down if it wasn't for more pressing problems. The light flared again. He pulled a pair of macro binoculars from his jacket. Two ties were tracking something. Could it be a ship? He gripped the railing, watching keenly. Could this be the answer he'd been seeking? Had rebels been there all along, stealing his men from under his nose? Or could it be? Yes. He'd heard the reports from Zala's moon of the fall of Captain Korda and the flight of the Graf children. Where else would they go but Agaris? He smiled. It was almost too perfect. He sharpened the focus, trying to make out the craft his fighters were pursuing. But the chase seemed to be over, the ties circling like rock vultures around a kill. Were the children dead then? He hoped not. They would be a valuable tool to make their parents talk. Then again, if the droid was still with them, Tarkin would no longer need the graphs, so maybe it would be cleaner if the children had perished. The entry buzzer whined, and Tarkin gestured. The shutter slid up to reveal a hulking figure almost too large to fit through the doorway. The KX security droid ducked his head and strode out onto the balcony, massive metal arms swinging at his sides. K4D8's black carapace had been polished to a fine sheen. On one shoulder, the Imperial symbol was emblazoned in gold, a symbol of his enhanced status. Seeing that, Tarkin smiled thinly. The droid's loyalties may have been pledged to a man Tarkin despised utterly, but all three of them were merely servants to a much greater cause.
Director Krennic sends his regards,
the droid said, his voice like metal scraping on metal.
He has commanded me personally to oversee transportation of the first shipment of Quadanium back to Sentinel Base. With your permission, Governor.
Of course, Tarkin said softly, pursing his lips.
And those were Krennic's only orders, were they? Because a more suspicious man might suspect that you were sent to spy on me.
K-48 pulled himself upright, servos whirring.
My assignment was clear, he said, to escort the first shipment as soon as the ore was prepared, and in the meantime to place myself in Governor Tarkin's service and carry out any further assignments as he sees fit.
Oh, so you're here to help, Tarkin asked. The director is too kind.
He felt that one more pair of hands might speed things along,
the droid explained. Tarkin's eyes narrowed.
Yes, that sounds like him.
Very well, droid. There's no sense hiding the truth. You know, and Director Krennic undoubtedly knows, that progress has been more than slow. In fact, our mining operations stalled before they even began.
He gestured down the sloping face of the compound to the courtyard at the bottom. The stone square was littered with the hulks of mining machines, drilling arms and ore extractors, rock pulverizers and drainage pumps, all of it lying idle, gathering fungus. Load lifters shifted the equipment from one end of the square to the other, and groups of stormtroopers swarmed back and forth. But even from up there, Tarkin could see that they had been ordered to look busy, to make it seem as though something was getting done. He knew better.
The director was led to believe Agaris had some of the richest Quadanium deposits in the galaxy,
K-48 said.
Isn't this compound itself a former mining colony?
Tarkin nodded. The Imperial base may have looked from the outside like a single steep stone wall leaning against the mountainside, but the miners had burrowed deep into the rock beneath them, leaving a complex network of dark, winding tunnels.
Sadly, the seams here have been tapped out, he said, and finding new drilling sites has proved challenging.
A stormtrooper survey group was gathering in the courtyard, checking their sidearms and securing their helmets. As they turned to face the mushroom forest, the soldiers seemed to draw together, clearly reluctant to leave the safety of the compound. Their commander gestured firmly and the troopers moved off, blasters gripped tightly. Tarkin could almost smell their fear.
Is the problem one of equipment?
K-48 asked.
Do your scanners need recalibrating or do...
The men keep disappearing,
Tarkin admitted abruptly.
We don't know why. We don't know if someone's taking them or if they're simply getting lost. But 16 patrols have vanished in the past 8 days, a total of 111 men.
K-48's surprise was evident in his pale metallic eyes.
111?
He repeated.
The few who return have no clear recollection of what happened,
Tarkin went on. Some speak of shapes in the mist, eyeless figures ambushing them in the dark, which is, of course, impossible. Agaris is devoid of sentient life. The old mining logs and our own sensors agree on that.
You suspect outside interference?
K-48 asked.
I have no idea what to suspect,
Tarkin said.
This foul planet confounds us at every turn, but all is not lost. I have had a pair of prisoners brought here who know everything there is to know about the world of Agaris. They'll give me the answers I seek, or they'll suffer for it.
The droid leaned closer.
I am programmed in over 10,000 different methods of interrogation,
he said coldly.
Please inform me if I can be of assistance.
Tarkin waved K-48 away.
That will not be necessary,
he said. Then he smiled.
Though, in fact, I do have a task for you. Moments ago, my fighters brought down a craft attempting to infiltrate Agaris airspace. On board, there may be 2 children and a droid who could be very useful in getting the answers I seek. Take a small squad. If the children survived, bring them to me. And either way, I want that droid's head.
Won't your fighter pilots pick up the survivors?
K-48 asked.
This is important to me,